Morning!
Morning!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey Bunty, hey, what's up, man? How's things at your end?
Things are good, Rohit. This has been a very interesting week for a range of different reasons, primarily because my daughter's new school has started, so she's in the thick of it. But no, other than that, we're just getting used to new schedules and new routines, but all good. How are things with you?
Oh, pretty good. It's kind of similar situation with, my kid's school as well, new school, new routines. It's been a very busy last couple of weeks, but also very good. Some fun things. Couple of weeks ago, we have a beautiful new theater that's opened out, auditorium that's opened out in San Francisco called the Chase Center. And
right.
I took my son along, very happy to go and see Metallica play with the San Francisco Symphony. Metallica is a San Francisco band and, like Bruce Lee, one of the treasures of San Francisco. So I feel very, very attached to them. I've always loved them. And then I just managed to catch, pretty good tickets at the last minute on Sunday, last Sunday, a week ago. Metallica was 2 weeks ago, so a week ago. My wife and I went and saw Elton John on his farewell tour. So,
right.
It's been a lot of music, and that's about it. I start my term tomorrow, but teaching a new course, excited about it. All good.
Cool. Well, so what are we going to talk about today, Rohit? We are sticking to the format that we picked up last week, which is touching the multiple set of stories. So what's on the cards today?
And we just figure that we'll vary it up, but we'll do this like one, big-ish episode. But to our listeners, just please do give us your feedback about how you think this is working, any suggestions you have, and so on. So there's several big stories. So one, the big story, major story is, Modi's in America, and there's this major event that the U.S. has planned for him, the U.S. called Howdy Modi. And, as we speak, I think he's addressed some major rally in Houston. And I think Trump attended it as well. I mean, the BJP, I'd say really the powers that be, Smriti Irani, Amit Shah, etc., are going nuts tweeting about it. All the Modi acolytes in the press are tweeting about it or going gaga about it as well. So that's one. And, there's a lot going on there, a lot to unpack. On a lighter note, there was a funny story this week, which was about, again, this is also a Gujarati story in America. It's some dude who's in his 30s or late 20s. He tried to pass off as an 81-year-old because he had that 81-year-old man's passport, but he got
right.
caught out by Indian customs officials.
So this happened in India. He was leaving India, pretending to be an 81-year-old.
This happened in India because he had this 81-year-old guy, Praful Patel or someone's passport, and he tried to change his appearance, but obviously his makeup skills weren't particularly noteworthy, and he tripped up. There's a young schoolboy who showed more spine and courage than almost any of our public figures, who recited a poem saying that, in an era where Godse is worshipped, you have to basically be Gandhi and stand for Gandhi. So that got a bit of news. And then, there's this other, it's sort of wannabe Barkhadat. There's a whole kind of series of them. There's some woman who I've never actually heard anything by her other than, see clips on social media, called Anjana Om Kashyap. I think she is an anchor for Aaj Tak. And she made a nasty remark about Aditya Thackeray, who's Uddhav Thackeray's son and Bal Thackeray's grandson and, has the family pedigree in full measure from what I can see. She said he's the Rahul Gandhi of the Shiv Sena. It was supposed to be a barb at his supposed ineffectuality, I suppose. But then immediately later she backtracked and, was terrified. And the reason she was, my sense is that, Rahul Gandhi's a decent guy. He's not going to go after a journalist, but the Shiv Sena won't hesitate to threaten, engage in violence, throwing, etc. So that's what must have happened. So I think those four stories are, there's a lot more obviously happening, but we could focus on those four.
Okay, so Howdy Modi, right? So this is essentially the Prime Minister's visit to America, where Modi's partial to stadium standing, right?
Correct.
He likes these events.
Yeah.
Where the local Indian diaspora show up. And when I say diaspora, I don't necessarily mean it's everybody. I mean people who have explicitly supported the party and his way of thinking. I'd be very curious to see what would it take for somebody to travel the distance to go, by staying in a country X, to travel to a stadium to hear the prime minister of another country talk. I'm just trying to square it up, because I think in the UK as well, there was a big function in Wembley, right? And I think one of the things that I picked up from it is essentially it's a celebration of all things Gujarati, first off, right? So it's kind of this kind of celebration of regional identity, which wants to subsume. The Wembley Stadium in London, which is where he did the event, is kind of a Gujarati hotspot, right? So this guy has done it in Texas, right? This Modi's in Texas, you say, in Houston?
Houston, yeah, he's in Texas.
Okay, so now, so my point is, leaning to your familiarity with America, I don't know how familiar you'll be with Houston, Texas. What's the catchment area? So who would, in your mind's eye, be the person who would drive up and attend a Modi rally in Houston, Texas?
Well, I think its location is such that, you know, you might have like a bunch of people from, you know, California is like not, it's far, but it's not like super far. You know, you can certainly, you know, make it there. But Houston, I know, is an important hub in the sense that, you know, when I lived in Atlanta and we had to get passports renewed and things like that, there's a U.S. consulate there. You know, the Indian community has historically concentrated, I think, in California, Silicon Valley, and then in the East Coast in the New Jersey area. But, you know, as time has gone by, they have also, like, you know, spread out in more areas. So I think there is an India forum out there. And my sense is what may have happened is that it's a big enough city where, you know, people who are fans of the Prime Minister Modi would be happy to kind of come in. And the initiative must have been taken by the particular Indian American Association or organization out there. So that must be it, you know, and they've done the sort of New Jersey Northeast thing. So this time I think maybe they wanted to, you know, hit the South and the West. And Houston is probably, you know, given that you have an Indian consulate there, from the organizational point of view, the Indian side of things, it's probably, you know, easy to do that. And I'm sure they could, you know, pack the stadium.
The reason I wanted to ask you that was, in India, to attend a political rally, right, you are induced with like bananas, breakfast, food packets. Right? And they give you chai ka paisa. Right? So I'm trying to understand, for this kind of diaspora drawn to this Houston Stadium event, obviously to see Modi and Trump, what was their inducement? Was there food packet? Was there pizza? What do you think notionally could have been the inducement? Because in India, you don't go for, unless there's some, I know Mamata Banerjee offers boiled egg and kela, and then there's vegetable biryani.
And then I remember Calcutta, there used to be Luchi Aludham, no, also?
Luchi Aludham. The thing is, there is a quid, it's a transactional thing, and I'm just trying to understand.
So
the transaction.
So first of all, you know, this food is in a historically non-capitalist society, like most societies in the world, food, water, these are things that are considered so basic that there's a sense in which, of course, it's being offered as a kind of bribe in the Indian context. But, you know, like, for instance, in your office, if you have lunch, you'll always offer your lunch to someone, right? There's also a sense in which food is something seen very fundamental beyond capital. In the West, it's very rare to find free food, right? You might have, like, you know, literally if there's an event, there'll be, you know, cookies and water or, you know, chips and a dip, that Indian kind of spread, you know, where there'll be starters, then there'll be, you know, full-fledged Rogan Josh, then, you know, rasmalai and kulfi ice cream. That doesn't happen. So the equivalent of food here is what I would say recognition. Because you have the Indian American community that for whatever reason feels that it's not been recognized enough. They feel, you know, marginalized or isolated. And, you know, we as a people are very status conscious. So thoda that what they say, bhav mil gaya na. So And the interesting thing is this craving for bhav is what links Modi with his with the people who show up. That Modi is getting bhav. And, you know, the people who are coming there, they feel that they are also being recognized. And the great, because we obviously have a complex about our greatness, right? No other society in the world.
I've cracked it, Rohit. I've cracked it. I think what you just described leads me to this vignette that there is going to be a photograph of an oddly smiling man shaking hands with Narendra Modi, right? And when he goes back home to his tire dealership or his motel or his corner store, alongside a picture of a local Democratic politician, because they are the only people who will be quoting their vote, will be the contradiction of Narendra Modi smiling and beaming. And both those pictures will be, and here's the rub. I don't think, and this is a conjecture, I don't think the Democrat quoting Midwestern trader Indian gets the flip that Modi represents kind of the Republican tradition in another part of the world, right?
Well, yeah, or the strongman tradition. You're absolutely right. They are, it, to me, it's very puzzling because, you know, whatever the politics of large numbers of diasporic Indians and the fact that I disagree very strongly with their politics, you know, whether it's your Gujarati businessman who runs a provision store, whether it's your, you know, guy working at IBM, these are smart people, right? And whatever your politics, whatever, you know, you may be the most bigoted person on earth, you may, you know, be a scientist, yet you might believe one of these, you know, fraud god men. Even accepting all of that, these people are too smart not to see the contradiction that, boss, in the US, you vote for, you're a minority, you vote for the Democrats precisely because they're a party that's better on immigration, better on minority rights, you vote for essentially secularism. But in India, you support a man whose entire career has been based, in a sense, on, you know, undermining, denigrating, and abrogating those very values. So, so I you know, it doesn't really compute. I mean, there is, these are contradictions. Humans are contradictory. Communities are contradictory. And this is, I suppose, you know, one of the abiding contradictions of the Indian community. But I think the point is that within that Indian community circle that, you know, look, Donald Trump, president of the US, chalo, he's a Republican. His policies may have also backfired against us. He's made things very hard for people who are applying for H-1B visas, especially Indians and Chinese. He's made things very hard for people who are applying for green cards. You know, same thing with the members of the Hispanic community. My sense is, you know, if you're a white New Zealander or a white Belgian person, you probably won't face that kind of, you know, those kinds of hoops. So, you know, their point is, despite all of this, he's, you know, the president of the most powerful nation in the world. He gave bhav to our Narendra Bhai, and Narendra Bhai, look, was kind enough to shake hands with me. And the Indian dude, you know, in his car dealership feels very nice. So you're spot on.
Well, look, I think we talked about this. I hope the people who've gone there and traveled the distance and taken the trouble to get, I hope they've got what they want. If it's a photograph, if it's a food packet, whatever it is that they wanted to get out of it, they've got it. But I hope that in the give and take of this kind of politics in another country, they are able to spot some of the contradictions. Which is what we were talking about. Look, we spent enough time. What was the next thing that we wanted to talk about, Rohit?
Yeah, I think we can go to this Indian guy, speaking of Gujaratis in America. I'll just share one thought that it's a passing thought. You know, this reminds me of that Darbar, great Darbar in India, where, you know, Victoria would come down and these Indian princely state kings or whatever, they would like a lot of pomp and ceremony. Like, they really wanted, you know, very elaborate supplication, genuflection. And I think the British were very smart. They cottoned onto it very quickly that in public, you give these guys a lot of bhav, right? You give them fancy titles. You give them, you know, some gift, some radio. You give the guy, you know, fine, a Rolls Royce is going to cost some money or whatever. You give him, you know, something motorized, some trinket. In return for it, the guy will give you one-third his territory. That's how we keep these guys as puppets, that you keep giving these guys this empty pomp and, you know, this natak of respect. And, you know, in a very sort of tragic way, that's what trickles down to. If you go to Quality's restaurant in Greater Kailash 2 in Delhi, you find these poor waiters who've been working there 30 years, you know, they'll wear that sort of white starched uniform with a turban and literally they'll, you know, bow in front of you. The guy will never turn his back to you after he serves you that dal makhani or Butter Chicken. He's actually going to walk, you know, backwards. So that you know, is this Natak from the British era. This is just this Indian obsession with Bhav. It lingers on in this way. But let me just jump to this guy. So this is some dude, I think Jignesh something, unless I get his name wrong. And basically he was trying to pass off as an 81-year-old, and customs caught him saying that his skin was too youthful, even though his, you know, he tried to like put glasses on, you know, walk with, I think, some kind of a little bit of a hunch, etc. So he got caught out. And to me, this is, I mean, there is no, there's, you know, I have to admire Gujju daring and initiative, but also there's, I mean, is there anything a Gujju won't do to go to America is my question.
So look, this is a very interesting question, Jignesh Bhai. Uh-huh. Look, I think we have to be quite clear. Just because there are two stories that pick on Gujaratis in America, one admittedly a prime minister, the other a man pretending to be somebody he's not. Well, maybe there are certain commonalities there. You know, we never know. Because the prime minister could be pretending to be somebody he's not. But look.
And once again, very quickly, that you do remember that Modi was denied a visa for many years to go to the US.
Yeah. But look, my thing about Jignesh Bhai is, like, he's sitting at home. And I'm assuming that he's trying to fly out of either Delhi or Mumbai. Not Ahmedabad. Because, though, admittedly, Ahmedabad has direct flights.
Yeah.
Or used to, you know, with Jet Airways. Anyway, that's not the point. That's a digression. So when he goes into I don't think he would have done this makeup by himself. Right? I think given that this is a life chance issue, right, I conject that there would have been a beauty salon involved, right?
Yeah.
Now Jignesh Bhai goes to a salon, and I'm thinking, what is his brief to the man who gives him a shave occasionally and trims his hair? Because that's the context that I'm operating in. That, you know, Jignesh has to make it. So do you think he tells the guy, "Dekh, mera visa ka chance aaya hai, but it is contingent on me looking like an 80-year-old. Ab tu magic dikha."
No, I don't think so. Because the thing about India is, you know, when it comes to the US, you know, it's become easier to go, no doubt. But still, it's, you know, people get denied visas. And right now, the Trump administration is not particularly conducive to large numbers of Indians coming even for tourism. Right. So you have to be very careful about your U.S. or foreign connections in India. It's a very tricky one because, you know, you don't want to play the part of the sort of entitled NRI. But, you know, for instance, I remember many years ago when I was still a student and I would go to India, you know, I would sometimes meet people, just an acquaintance or some, you know, a tailor who dropped in at my in-law's place or something. And he would start saying that, you know, my son wants to go to America. Can you get him across? And I was like, look, it doesn't work that way, right? So if this guy were to tell that person, that guy's point would be that, look, I have this on you. If you don't, you never know. Like, the guy might turn around and say that, boss, once you get there, you better help me come. Otherwise, I will, you know, gently, like, release some information to the American authorities. So I have a feeling that this guy must have said that, you know, fancy dress party hai, or I want to surprise my, you know, great uncle Praful Bhai or something like that. I want to look at him. I doubt very much unless the guy, I don't know. I mean, you know, how did he get this person's passport is another question. Was that a relative of his?
This is my question, which is that unless there was full disclosure at salon, right? Because there are two things involved here, Rohit. He didn't have to randomly look like an 80-year-old, which is a fancy dress theory. He had to look like a specific 80-year-old.
Correct.
Right? So therefore, I'm going down the line of full disclosure that he goes to Rocky Saloon and says, "Bhai, mujhe aise dikhna hai." Right? Now, hold that thought there, right? Before we get into the visa complications, that person receiving the instruction to turn a 30-year-old into an 80-year-old, right, what goes through his mind, right? That, you know, this is probably one of the most bizarre requests that he's come up with, right? I think in that, we're assuming it's a salon. It could, if it's not a salon, then it spoils the fun of the story because, you know, I can't imagine it him doing it by himself.
No. You have to go to, you're right. It has to be a salon. Look, here's what I'm going to say, right? That on the one hand, it's a very bizarre request, right? On the other hand, India has more like bizarre things happen than any country in the world. Because just by virtue of the stories you hear in Mumbai, the kind of bizarre stuff you hear, people have seen and dealt with everything. My sense is that what may have been the case is that if there is some nexus of people who either forge passports or get stolen passports, and get people across as to the US by, you know, getting them to impersonate someone else, then that entire setup, the salon has to be part of that. That might be the case. That, you know, this guy paid whatever. He paid a flat sum of 5 lakhs to some shady agent or something. That guy said, look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get you a fake passport. I will try to get you someone close in age to you. But if it's like a 75-year-old dude or a 64-year-old woman, then, you know, we have this salon who's on retainer with us. They will also do that. So I think that may be the case. You know, there's someone who just fixes all aspects of it. But yeah, okay. I mean, if he went on his own, you know, it's very odd. Though my sense is that, you know, people in Bombay, if this was Bombay, I don't know, maybe it was Baroda or Surat. And, you know, Surat is, I mean, there's a lot of odd stuff seeming to happen in Gujarat now. You know, last week we spoke about that odd flatulence competition in Surat. But, you know, I think in Bombay, what happens is that, look, boss, Bombay is a dhanda city, right?
Yeah.
If a guy is coming in and giving you money, if the regular rate for doing some, you know, basic haircut, touch-up, etc. is whatever, you know, 150 rupees, this guy's coming and giving you 400 rupees, take the money, man. Like, you know, that's what the Bombay attitude is, that, dekho, tum mujhe kaam bolo, main paisa lega, kaam karega, but I don't want to ask too many questions, right? So, because it's a city of, like, you know, hustlers or survivors, it's a tough city to survive in. So I think, I have a feeling that, you know, the guy may not have, like, wanted to know also too much.
Well, look, we talked about it. I think the curiosity is not the fact that the guy got caught.
Yeah.
But I think we'd like to draw our listeners into the worldview of this guy in the moments leading up to the journey to the airport, right? Because I think that is where the interest is, that how our man Jignesh Bhai navigates that conversation of trying to look like somebody on a passport picture 50 years beyond his age. That to me is kind of is the possibility of, you know, the magic of India. That's where the magic. And look, again, incidentally, we're not picking on Gujarati stories, by the way. There's a complete coincidence that farting, this man and Modi are all from Gujarat. There's no pattern in this, right? Because I think the next story that you want to talk about, and we'll talk about, is this guy in Uttar Pradesh, right, who did a speech. So, Rohit, just fill me in on that, you know, because we exchanged some notes on as we were going through the week.
And what I'm going to do in the interest of time, since we, you know, we already have are well into this, the final story we wanted to do was about this journalist, Anjana Om Kashyap, who, you know, compared, said that Aditya Thackeray is the Rahul Gandhi. We don't need to actually spend much time on it. I mean, I think the main point has been made. She's kind of a useless journalist anyways. And to me, like a pathetic kind of lickspittle sycophant of Modi. So the reason she's backtracking and terrified is, you know, obviously, you know, the Thackerays has come. So let's forget that. That's over and done with. So we'll focus on this. This is a young man. I think he's a school student in UP. And I think he was asked to recite a poem. But instead of, you know, coming up with something fawning like a Bollywood star, Akshay Kumar, would have come up with, or even Amitabh Bachchan, you know, some third-rate poem praising Modi and the BJP and Amit Shah to the skies. He rendered a very powerful rendition, you know, statement about that, you know, it was, he used the word Andhi, which is storm, to sort of rhyme with Gandhi, that, you know, there's a kind of storm, you know, brewing in India. And at this point of time, what you must do, the right thing to do, the ethical thing to do, the honorable, just thing to do, is really to side not with Godse, which is what Modi and, you know, the BJP ostensibly represent, but to side with Gandhi. And you know, hats off to him, because this child has done what, you know, what every other television, almost every prominent personality in India has, you know, miserably failed to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we look back at the country, say, 5 to 7 years ago, there was a certain amount of reverence with which Gandhi was held across the country, right? And what has shocked me in the last 7 years is the revisionist tendencies that have swept across the country. And quite a lot of the people who, you know, I remember when, I don't know whether you have a recollection of this, there was once a journalist who called Gandhi. Yeah, this was in the 80s,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. 90s.
Called him, yeah, something like...
Ashok. It was Ashok Rao Kavi.
Yes, Ashok Rao Kavi called Gandhi like some...
Banya bastard. He called him Banya bastard
or something like that.
Yeah, he called him a Banya bastard, yeah.
And I think that everybody in the country was like really offended. So the question there was, he was trying to say freedom of speech. I'm not about, you know, bitching about Gandhi. I wanted to kind of say it out loud. And at that point, the liberal discourse was that, you know, a man can call Gandhi whatever he wants. It's a free country.
Right.
So 25 years down the line, the discourse has changed so radically that slagging of Gandhi is one thing, but, you know, eulogizing and celebrating Godse has become, was kind of the assassin, has become completely possible. So the ramble for this is that, you know, here's a school kid, probably about 12 to 13 years old, if that, in UP, which is a hotbed of BJP politics. He stands up and says that, look, in this, and I forget the exact Hindi phrase, but it's a very moving couplet, where he essentially says that, you know, which you highlighted earlier on, Rohit, that in the times of storms, I think the word Andhi and Gandhi rhyme, and then there is, anyway, it's a remarkable thing that this young man does.
Can I just interject very quickly to to bring up a consummate irony, which kind of links two of our stories together? The musical cultural program that, you know, inaugurated this Howdy Modi festival in Houston, it started with a rendition of singers singing Mahatma Gandhi's favorite song, Vaishnava Jan. And this, you know, this to me is, there's something about the hypocrisy and venality of Modi at work here, that he, you know, he worships Savarkar, but he also wants to co-opt Gandhi. He de facto celebrates Gandhi's assassins, but he also wants to claim the legacy of Gandhi because, you know, Gandhi stands as a towering figure in really world history. And so in some ways, you know, this, what this kid has done for me is, it's a version of the Emperor's New Clothes, but the courage it must have taken, and I think he should be very proud of himself, and I think his parents should be very proud of raising, you know, a very fine and courageous young man, and we can all learn something from him, because, you know, I mean, we speak our mind, but, you know, Banti, you and I are fairly, like, insulated from, you know, the realities of life, not just, I mean, you know, it's hard enough to be in Bombay or Delhi, frankly, and, you know, even in your workplace today, to be, like, critical of Modi, because you don't know. I mean, you know, your colleagues like might be open. I mean, people are like openly bigoted now. There's, I hear all kinds of stories that, you know, in offices, people pick on minorities. Everyone has to go along with the Rara Modi kind of nonsense. Or at the very least, you know, even if you don't agree with that, you can't criticize him without 50 people pouncing on you. It may have, you know, implications for your career. Here in the US also, I know someone who took up a job and was, you know, terrified of being known as sort of anti-Modi. Because his new boss in India at this company was like kind of Modi Bhakt. So imagine that it's that hard in the metros, which supposedly are, you know, cosmopolitan or whatever you want to call it. And I'm not saying that UP is not really cosmopolitan, far from it, but you have Yogi Adityanath essentially running a kind of, you know, mafia state there. For this child to do it, or this young man to do it, remarkable, absolutely remarkable.
Look, I think we've talked about this. What's the name of the school kid?
Let me just see. I don't know. Are you? Did you find that as you get into your? By the way, Falguni Pathak sang a new Garba song. She used to be big in the 90s when I was in college. This singer. My memory gets worse. I don't know if you found it. You know, I blank out on names now in a way that 10 years ago
Look,
I used to.
I think one of the things that I wanted to call out was that, no, Abhi, I think it's very interesting because Falguni Pathak, what did she then mention Falguni Pathak?
She was a Garba singer. She used to, you know, the local Garba celebration. She was big, used to perform on these Dandiya and Garba stuff. So she's composed some new song and she's performing at this event. I don't know if she's come from India or she lives in the US now.
For
Howdy Modi.
He's done that. Look, I think
he's a class 11 student, so he'd be about 16, 17.
Right.
He said, "Kaun kehta hai?" So this is a He recited a poem, Kaun kehta hai ki main aandhi ke saath hoon, Godse ke daur mein main Gandhi ke saath hoon. So he's saying that there is an aandhi, there is a storm, a pro-Godse storm. That's the storm, that's the tide, right? Those are the winds that are blowing. I'm not with that storm. I'm not with the, you know, pro-Godse storm. I am with Gandhi, who is, you know, the legacy of Gandhi is actually, you know, something that the storm is seeking to wipe out, if one runs with the metaphor. It's been downloaded, shared a million times on social media. His name is, I don't know, they haven't mentioned his name, but he spoke to someone in the National Herald, which is what I'm picking this up from, that he had been asked to speak on the poetry of Kaka Hatrasi, a prominent Hasya Kavi in Hindi. But at the last minute, he was asked to change the subject and speak on Mahatma Gandhi. And his name is Ayush Chaturvedi, class 11 student of Central Hindu Boys School from Varanasi.
Right. Look, I think we are speechless. I'm without speech because I just think that, you know, it's easy, as you rightly point out, Rohit, to get forget how difficult sometimes it is for young people to speak their mind, and because now there's a palpable fear. You know, even in the worst of times in India, you could say things about politicians.
Yeah.
And it would be powerful, of course, but now it's come to, and basically how social, you know, you've done much more work on this than, you know, I have with your book on, you know, social media and the Hindu right, which is how they kind of have this organized way of belittling people.
Correct.
Who say things that are not in line or doesn't fit the kind of storyline, as it were.
Okay.
And I think there's somebody who said very famously that you can have your own set of opinions but not your own set of facts.
Right.
And I think this guy has basically called that out, that, you know, you can have an opinion but that's not what the fact is.
And I just want
to... We've talked about, over to you for the last word, Rohit, before we wrap up.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point you make about facts and opinions. And, you know, it obviously goes to this sort of malaise of fake news and deliberate propaganda. I just want to shout out to, these are not, you know, this is not a poem that's composed by this young man. These are lines that belong to a poet called Imran Pratap Gadhi. And so, you know, we do want credit where credit is due. And the young man, Chaturvedi, Ayush Chaturvedi, has said that these are Imran Pratap Gadhi's words. And then, you know, as he was reciting them, his teacher recorded it. So you know, kudos to Imran Pratap Gadhi for coming up with these wonderful lines and to this young man for saying it. And, you know, to anyone who speaks truth and power in these, you know, I think, singularly undemocratic times in India. So I think on that note, maybe we should, wrap this episode up and
look forward to hearing from you. Chalo, take care, boss.
Thank you so much for listening to us. Rohit and Bunty would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.